Good point. Let's go to King next. And by the way, David, thank you for making the attempt at burnt orange. I'm not quite sure you got the color right.
I didn't quite get it right. I know.
But nice attempt, and thanks. So let's go to King versus Catholic Health Initiatives, yet another employment case. I think this raises a couple of points. One is, when is the duty to preserve triggered? And so, you know, it's very obvious if you get receipt of a lawsuit, well, that's obviously a trigger date. If you got a letter from the other side making a demand, that's most likely a trigger date. This case, I think, exemplifies just how murky it sometimes can get. So here, prior to receiving the demand letter, the facts are a little vague here. We don't know whether the plaintiff herself made any threats of litigation at the time of discharge or at the time that she was still employed there. But nevertheless, the company realized as they were engaged in the termination process that this was a high risk decision. And then there were other circumstances there that the court held that it should have placed Catholic Health under notice that it should suspend its 30-day deletion policy of emails. One learning point I think from this is, you know, I think sometimes you do have to err on the cautious side. This was highly debatable during the 2015 rule amendments. A lot of the business community wanted a bright line. And some people actually pushed that the bright line should be upon receipt of notice of the lawsuit. I could surely see a whole bunch of shredding parties taking place before that happened. So I'm not sure that's an appropriate bright line at all. But nevertheless, it does get fuzzy. And the takeaway from this case is you should probably err on caution. Once the duty to preserve has been triggered, here's another one, another case illustrating the new technologies at play. So we had yet another messaging system, this time Microsoft Link. And sometimes Microsoft Link messages were saved in Outlook, but that was only enabled on a user-by-user basis. Then Catholic Health moved to Skype for Business in 2017. So now you have potential migration issues from one platform to another platform. And then we also had voicemail here, but Catholic Health did not save voicemails or utilize any programs to forward voicemails to emails. Then if this wasn't enough on a number of issues, then we have text messages. And so here, the court found that none of the custodians identified by the plaintiff were using company-issued phones. So the employer argued that those text messages were not reasonably available or in their possession, custody, or control. Thoughts, David?
Well, there's a lot here. I mean, and I think one of the important parts, one of the important facts here is that this was a, at the heart of this issue was a complaint by one of the employees that another employee was sexually harassing her and making her work life miserable. And it was going on for quite a period of time, and it was well known throughout the organization. And I believe she actually quit complaining about the conduct. And so I think the court found that, the defendant did reasonably anticipate litigation. And given all the facts that are presented, I think that was an understandable conclusion. And I think it's one that as a company, particularly in these employment matters, people need to be aware of. They should have policies within legal to be in communication with HR to address that so that they're not making ad hoc decisions, which are easily second-guessed after the fact. And I agree with you that being conservative on this point is a good idea. With the idea that if nothing happens, you do have also a policy that says, well, if I don't hear anything after a certain period of time, I no longer reasonably anticipate, right? To protect yourself. And in here, there were really two trigger events, the woman leaving and then the eventual firing of the other individual. I think I will sort of jump. So this then, you know, I think there's been lots of case law that says, you know, the different channels of communication all are covered by the same principles. There's no legal reason to treat email different than voicemail, different than text messaging versus instant messaging, but there are probably different costs and burdens and different value in that information in resolving the dispute. In this particular case, given that many of the communications between both the individuals who were sort of watching over these events unfold, as well as the two individuals, were not on email, but these other communications, there was a reason to believe it was a pretty rich location for relevant and material evidence. I was surprised by the short shrift the judge gave on the possession, custody, and control question on the phone, given they were BYOD. BYOD appeared to be something that the company accepted. They, even though they may not have had a policy on it, it was the practice and custom of the employees to use BYOD and to do business on their personal devices. I think while this is an area that's in flux in the United States, I think there you take a large risk under certain judges in certain jurisdictions